From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made just this morning, the news breaking from the Gates Foundation. The foundation is now asking that the Common Core be shelved for 2 years to allow teachers and schools to adapt. Now, this is not some outside voice making a request. The Gates Foundation is the chief financial driver of the Common Core, and this almost certainly means that changes are coming. We're going to try to follow the money in education this hour with a longtime guest of this program. David Hirsch is a professor at the University of Rochester's Warner Graduate School of Education and Human Development. Just returned, by the way, from 9 weeks in New Zealand and Australia. We're meeting with officials there as they, on another part of the world, another continent, are looking at standardized testing and issues that we're talking about here. Nice to have you in studio. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
You just got back from 9 weeks. They're talking about those same issues, huh?
Yes, because most countries are looking at what the United States is doing and seeing that they're putting in more standardized curriculum, more standardized tests. And in Australia and New Zealand, where I was, they were thinking that they should follow what the United States is doing. They're interested in keeping up with other countries. On the other hand, what I was telling them, and what my argument has been now for, it seems like, decades, is that what we are doing in the United States is, in fact, going in the wrong direction, because we should not be doing as much standardized testing as we do. We should not be using standardized testing in the way that we do. We should not be privatizing in the way that we are. And, in fact, there's other models, such as the Finnish model, which does not use standardized testing throughout to assess students or teachers and individual students or teachers throughout their career in school, except for an exam for college admittance. And so it's a whole different model than what we have in the United States. And so I was basically giving a cautionary tale. So I was mostly also invited by unions and universities.
Well, Professor Hirsch is going to be giving a presentation a week from yesterday.
Yes.
It is. That's the 17th of June, 7 to 9 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church on Following the Money. Now, in a moment we're going to get to that. Let me really start with the breaking news from the Gates Foundation. And this shook up a lot of people today. This is a letter from Vicki Phillips, who is the Director of Education for the Gates Foundation. And it's a 3-page letter. I'm just going to read a chunk of it here, and we'll have David react, and we'll talk about the impact here. Vicki Phillips from the Gates Foundation writes, "Even the best new ideas," and she's talking about Common Core, "even the best new ideas aren't self-fulfilling. They have to be put into practice wisely. That's especially true when it comes to using assessment scores as a factor in student or teacher evaluations. No evaluation system will work unless teachers believe it is fair and reliable, and it's very hard to be fair in a time of transition. The standards need time to work. Teachers need time to develop lessons, receive more training, get used to the new tests, and offer their feedback. Applying assessment scores to evaluations before these pieces are developed would be like measuring the speed of a runner based on her time without knowing how far she ran, what obstacles were in the way, or whether the stopwatch even worked." That's just a part of Vicki Phillips' letter from the Gates Foundation, in which they are urging essentially a 2-year moratorium on Common Core. David, we're going to be talking about the money involved here. What's your quick take on this?
Well, my quick take is a little bit different than yours. I see what they're saying is that we need a 2-year moratorium on using the Common Core tests to hold students accountable, or to use them in a high-stakes manner. So not to use them to determine whether students should advance to the next grade, or not to use them to assess how the school or teachers are doing. And in New York, in fact, there's been such an uproar from parents and teachers about the Common Core tests and the way that they were going to be applied to students and schools and to teachers, that there's been resistance. And in fact, I think it was while I was gone, a decision was made to postpone using the Common Core to assess students for 2 years.
That's right.
But the Common Core is still going ahead. We still have the same standards. We still have the same curriculum.
Right, the testing not. And then there's the question, as Vicki Phillips referenced.
And you can still use the testing. We just can't use them to hold in a high-stakes manner in which they're intended to be used.
But teacher evaluations were a question still with the test, and they still are.
In New York, they're still planning to use the test they're also using the test to evaluate teachers. So not the students, but yes, for the teachers, it seems the one difference, the only difference I see between what is being said there and what we now have is that that would apply not holding teachers responsible for the test scores for their students for 2 years. In New York, that was initially agreed to, but Governor Cuomo was very resistant to it, as was Commissioner King, saying this is really about holding teachers accountable.
Professor Hirsch agreed to come on this program before we knew the news would be coming from the Gates Foundation today that they are joining the call to essentially say, shelve the high stakes testing surrounding Common Core for 2 years.
You still have the testing. You just can't use them to assess teachers, you know, and determine whether they're effective teachers or not, and determine whether students are effective. You know, we're still using them to determine whether we're still going to get test scores this fall about the students. We just can't use them in a high stakes way.
Now, but either way, this is a change in approach for the Gates Foundation, and they must be responding to something. Now,
they are.
It was Lindsay Layton in the Washington Post who just a few days ago published a story called How Bill Gates Pulled Off the Swift Common Core Revolution. And her story also sort of shook up the education world, told a lot of people what they suspected or kind of already knew, but in great detail about the money. She takes the story back to 2008 when David Coleman and Gene Wilhoit went to Bill Gates and said, we have too many school districts, too many schools, too many states with different standards, and you've got kids graduating high school who immediately need remedial classes. We need better national standards. We need your help. And apparently Bill Gates called back a few weeks later and says, you've got the money.
Right.
And puts $200 million into a push, not just to develop it, but to help politically motivate it. And it passed rather quickly.
Right.
That story, did it lead to the announcement from the Gates Foundation today, David? Do you think that that was part of it, that they felt some heat?
I think they're getting some pushback, and clearly that story, which was in the Washington Post, so it wasn't in an unknown newspaper, was probably influential in making that decision. I think people are becoming aware of the money that Bill Gates has been putting behind this and the impact that it has. If I can just give one indication of that that's not mentioned in that particular story is one bit of research says that Bill Gates has spent $2.3 billion in supporting the Common Core and has given money to 1,800 different organizations. And this includes teachers' unions. So he gave money to the NEA and AAFT. He gave money to universities. He gave money to everybody on the political left, political right, again, 1,800 different organizations, to get them to support the Common Core. And people took the money and then said, we'll support it. And that was why it was pushed through so quickly, because there was no resistance, because you had so many people taking money from the Gates Foundation who now were basically committed to saying that it was a good thing. Now, some of those organizations have said, after further thought, we don't want your money. But he's put so much money behind this, and he's had so much influence. One of the things that was mentioned, or that I mentioned in a recent publication, is that he and David Brooks, who writes an op-ed piece for the New York Times, had dinner with 80 U.S. senators to talk about the Common Core. I mean, not only does Bill Gates obviously have a lot of money, but he also has access to everybody he wants to get access to. I can't meet with 80 senators, but he can, and he can get stuff pushed through. What he did.
We're talking to Professor David Hirsch from the Warner School of Education at the University of Rochester. And before we even continue down the road of the money, because I think what you're helping us do is very important, understanding the money. I want to ask if you have formed a conclusion about what you think Bill Gates' motivation is, and does that matter? If you look at the Gates Foundation, they have tried to help different causes in different parts of the world.
Right.
They're pouring millions and now billions of dollars into education. Why do you think he's doing it?
Well, I think partly because he cares about education. He has, as you say, put money into other causes around the world. In fact, I have an article that has also critiqued his other causes around the world, particularly around health and agriculture, because he's been doing work in Africa, as have I. And one of my criticisms, and actually the World Health Organization's criticisms, is that he doesn't actually talk to anybody else. He basically creates his own policy about how to improve health in developing countries, what we should do, and goes off on his own and does it. And that often causes more problems than it solves. The other issue that I have two other issues with him if I'm going to get into my issues, but a second one is that he often looks for technological solutions rather than more practical ones. And in Africa, and I've talked about this at the UN twice in the past several years, is the problem in terms of deaths is really around clean water and sanitation. If we could just get toilets into rural villages or into schools. I was in a school in Africa, I think it was in Uganda, with 1,100 students, and one of the questions I had when I saw no outhouses is, where do you go to the bathroom? And they said, out in the field. Well, we can start thinking about how many diseases are caused by 1,100 people having to relieve themselves in the field behind the school every day. So, but that's not really as sexy as some of the things that he's been investing his money into or putting his money into. And I said investing. There is some question about whether this is also not about making some money, because now with the Common Core, what they want to do is develop Common Core, well, they're developing Common Core curriculum with the goal of having similar curriculum in schools around the United States so that you can go from one school to another. And he has linked up with Pearson, another one of the organizations I'd like to critique today. He's linked up with Pearson to create curriculum to put on Microsoft tablets.
Yeah, let me jump in.
There's lots of potential for him making profit out of this also.
Now, let me explain here. In February, Microsoft announced it was joining Pearson, the mm-hmm. world's largest educational publisher, to load Pearson's Common Core classroom materials onto Microsoft's yes. tablet, which is called the Surface.
Right.
That product will allow Microsoft to compete for school district spending with Apple, obviously whose iPad is the dominant tablet
right.
in the marketplace. Now, Gates has dismissed any suggestion
right.
that he's motivated by self-interest. And in fact, I have a couple of cuts from Bill Gates's. He not only talked to the Washington Post, mm-hmm. but he sat down for a camera interview. And Dave, let's go to the second one. Let's where he's talking about profiting from the Common Core. Bill Gates was asked exactly
right.
this question.
Right.
Is Microsoft going to profit? Mm-hmm. Is this about you making money? This is what Bill Gates says.
I hope I can make this clear. I believe in the Common Core because of its substance and what it will do to improve education. And that's the only reason I believe in the Common Core. And I have no, you know, this is giving money away. This is philanthropy. This is trying to make sure students have the kind of opportunity I had. There is nothing, it's so almost outrageous to say otherwise in my view.
So he's saying mm-hmm. not about
right.
money. Now, let me also read the comments from a popular education blog called EduWonk. This is mm-hmm. Andrew Rotherham, who writes, quote, "In my experience, and I have worked with both the Gates Foundation and Microsoft, the firewalls between the two are quite real. This is one mm-hmm. of those you can't prove a negative type things, but senior foundation officials working on education innovation are largely unknown to key Microsoft personnel. In any event, like or dislike the Common Core, it's absurd to argue that Gates is doing this to enrich himself, given the state yeah. of the education sector, and you may have noticed that he apparently already has some money himself already. The words mm-hmm. wasted on that would be better spent on analysis of why, despite all the money spent, Common Core is still facing such implementation mm-hmm. challenges."
Right.
So he's saying Bill Gates is rich already,
right.
and there is a separation in the Gates Foundation and Microsoft. He doesn't believe it's
right.
about money. Bill Gates says it's not about making
right.
money. You're raising the point, though.
Well, I think... Actually, you raised the point about whether what was motivating him around this.
I think it's a fair question.
And I think it's
I'm not saying it's unfair to ask.
Right.
But you're saying you think that there it's a – you wonder.
Well, I want to just not pretend that it's not – that there's not some potential for making money out of this. I think, in fact, I want to go back to what you just said is there's better questions to ask than what are his motivations. And one is what are the consequences of his motivations.
Sure.
And in fact, what I've been worried about is he has a lot of money. Pearson has a lot of money. A lot of people have a lot of money. And that's why I've organized this event for 6 days from now, is to try to figure out how does educational policy get made in New York? Because it used to be educational policy was something that was made at the local level. You could go into schools and find out how the textbooks got selected, who developed the curriculum, how it was connected to state standards. We've had standards for a long time of one kind or another. It was something that was done at the local level in school districts, at the state level in terms of guidance, and it was something that was not done except for at the federal level, except for in terms of vocational education and special education. And it was not done at the national level. And by national level, I mean we now have these international corporations that are interested in influencing educational policy. So educational policy, at one point, you could figure that out on your own, and it was something that was done mostly locally. Now, my concern is that the power is shifted from people who are billionaires, who are coming up with what they think is a good idea. We also read about this last week, that there's a new organization called High Achievement New York, which is mounting a $500,000 phone and digital advertising campaign over the next few weeks to promote the Common Core, being funded by Bill Gates. I would rather that we actually sit down, as you and I are talking about this, and that we would sit down in our communities and talk about what makes a good school, what kind of curriculum do we want, how do we assess students, how do we ensure that we have good teachers, how do we support teachers to improve over the life of their careers, and not have what well, now is a discussion about all sorts of things that I think are really irrelevant to what makes for good schools. And it's not a discussion that we control. It's a discussion controlled by other people who make the news when they make an announcement. I mean, you know, we're discussing Bill Gates. We're not discussing, hey, what should we do about concentrated poverty in Rochester?
Yes,
you know? So it diverts our attention from many of the important things we should be talking about.
Mr. Gates, in that same interview, did discuss the point on who makes education mm-hmm. policy, who should make right. education policy. You know, he's been accused of strong-arming education policy against the will of teachers mm-hmm. and local districts.
Right.
And he talked about that kind of reform. So mm-hmm. let's listen to the other cut from Bill Gates. This is him talking to the Washington Post on that issue.
We fund people to look into things. We don't fund people to say, okay, we'll pay you this if you say you like the Common Core. We've never done anything like that. We do evaluations. If those things go well, which some do, some mm-hmm. do not, then we create more options. But, you know, our voice is not there when the final choice of what to scale up is made. That's a governor, a superintendent, a school board who decides all those things.
Do you disagree with that last line? I suspect you do, David. He's saying, look, we're trying to give ideas, but it's still the local districts in control.
Yes, he's saying that. There's a lot of pressure to follow what they're promoting. I mean, one is he says that they also come up with ideas and have them evaluated. So we now have EdTPA, which is the system that's going to be used, that's used in New York State to evaluate students who are in universities practicing to become teachers. And it's the exam, which is a written exam, and also a video that will be reviewed of their teaching that they will need to pass in order to become a certified teacher. EdTPA was field tested by the Education Development Center, a nonprofit organization that receives their money from the Gates Foundation. You know, and Gates was the one who asked them to do that evaluation. So there's a conflict of interest often if you're giving money to an organization to evaluate what you're doing, and they then come up with, you know, positive response. I think that's a concern about conflicting interests. And the other one is, you know, I guess I get to pick on Commissioner King for a change too. So we have these 23 Regent Fellows that was recently announced several months ago, who give advice to Commissioner King.
John King, New York State Education right. Commissioner.
And that they get money from the Gates Foundation. They also get money from the Tisch Foundation, which is a foundation set up by the Chancellor to give advice on how to implement the Common Core in New York. And one of the questions was to Commissioner King was, are you free to actually resist? Well, in what way does their advice influence your decisions? This is a organization. This is people hired not by the Department of Education. They're funded by an outside source. And does it in any way influence your decision-making process? Because there's a lot of money behind that. They're being paid often $200,000 a year for these 23 fellows. So we're talking about lots of money. And he said, no, they don't influence me. I always do what's best for the students. Well, one is there's a lot of money behind it. And and you wouldn't want to come out of it saying, oh, well, there's a lot of money behind it. This whole thing has gone on, but it hasn't really made any difference in what I do. And then also one of the organizations funding it is your boss, the chancellor, because they're the ones who hire the commissioner. So there's a lot of influence here by people who are very powerful and have money. You're correct to say, yes, they're free to do what they want. I'm just raising the questions about follow the money.
Follow the money. And if they don't do what the foundation who's funding them wants, that money could dry up.
Exactly.
And so here's an interesting way to start following that money. And this comes from the Washington Post article. The Common Core standards were adopted very quickly. Mm-hmm. As we said, essentially no field testing.
Right.
You went from the idea in a private room to 45 states adopting in a matter of just a couple of years. Kentucky went first, and here's quoting from the Washington Post article. Alarmed that as many as 80% of community college students were taking remedial classes, lawmakers had recently passed a bill that required Kentucky to write new standards for K through 12. Quote, all of our consultants and our college professors had reviewed the Common Core standards, and they really liked them. This is what one of the Kentucky education leaders said. Quote, and there was no cost for us. We didn't have any money to do this work, and here we were, able to tap into this national work and get the benefits and the Gates Foundation money and the best minds in the country. Without the Gates money, we wouldn't have been able to do this. So Kentucky signed on to the Common Core before there was even a final set of standards.
Exactly.
They didn't even wait to see the final set of standards. They said, if there's money coming to us, we'll do it.
Right.
And that's how it started. And the Gates Foundation spent about $200 million in a similar way across the country, getting different states to think about, here, you can get access to this money.
Well, they've also funded a lot of organizations that are part of the Common Core organization, Achieve, Inc., National Governors Association, et cetera. They all get Gates money. Again, 1,800 organizations. So there's a lot of money going to a lot of people who are being encouraged to think positively about the Common Core. It's a lot of influence.
It does occur to me that the funds are starting to ring.
And we're doing this in a time, you know, this is also beginning in a time of an economic recession when schools are laying off teachers for lack of money.
We're talking to David Hirsch from the Warner School of Education at the University of Rochester, who is presenting at an event next week called Follow the Money, How Education Policy is Made in New York, a Dialogue. And that event, June 17th from 7 to 9, that's next Tuesday, at the First Unitarian Church. Designed for who? Who should be there?
What I'm interested in, basically beginning the dialogue. I want to say, tell people as much as of what I know about who's giving money to whom. And we haven't talked about Governor Cuomo and who's been giving money to him, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm trying to figure out, well, how is educational policy being made in New York and who's influencing that policy making? And many of them are giving money to get that done. So I'm going to try to outline what I know. But I'm hoping that there'll be, and I know that there are many people in this community who know about many things I don't know. So I'm hoping there'll be school board members, administrators, teachers, other university faculty, parents who'll say, well, that's a good thing that you brought that up, but you're missing this. Or maybe we should ask something about, you know, and I don't know what I don't know. But I'm hoping that people enter into the conversation as a dialogue to try to figure this out. So it's not about the pros and cons of the Common Core, which I think a lot of people might like to discuss, but that's not really what I want to discuss. I want to really discuss how does policy get made in New York? Who are the people that are putting money into that? What are the politics behind that? And see if we can get that started. I'm trying to figure, and I'm hoping this might be an ongoing dialogue and that this will happen again and again as people try to share their understanding. And again, I don't have a political agenda in terms of Democrat versus Republican, et cetera. I'm just trying to understand what's going on and how that makes sense. And what my concern is that the public, in particular, is being marginalized in discussion, as are educators. And if we want to reinsert ourselves into the conversation, I think we have to understand that while we may not have money, there's other ways for us to have a voice.
We're going to get to the phones in a moment. If you want to join the conversation, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Bernard in Fairport, first up. Thanks, Bernard.
Thanks. I guess I object to this, the kind of the underlying concept here, that if you have money and you spend money, you're basically trying to do something that's wrong. I don't think that's the way this works. I like to follow the money. I like to know who's spending the money. I'd like to know who's getting the money. But I don't just off the top of my head say, if you have money, you're a bad person. If you accept money, you're a bad person. I think that's the concept that's wrong in this whole discussion. You know, Bill Gates has done some very good things.
Indeed.
And the money he spends has some value. Mm-hmm. And the people who take his money also provide some value. And the underlying problem is the education system is broken. And people like you who teach it need to say why it's broken and convince people to change it. And, oh, by the way, you can have a very good argument at a meeting, but the money will help convince them. So don't go against the money. Leverage the money. And, oh, by the way, understand what is needed to fix the system. I don't believe that the education system understands that. I think many people in the education system deny that it's broken. And so stop following the money. Follow the problem. Come up with a solution. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bernard. Okay.
Well, I think I agree with the comment somewhat. And in fact, you know, the issue is not that giving money is essentially a bad thing. Bill Gates, early in his career, was giving money to schools to develop new programs. And in fact, some of the money came to the Rochester City School District, and it was an attempt to be innovative. And I thought that was, in fact, a good thing. The problem was, and I think that that project failed, and it's been described in a number of books and elsewhere, is that he really did not include as much as he should have the teachers in the community in the process of making decisions about how to use the money, and then was disappointed when it wasn't as successful as he wanted it to be. So the question, you know, so I agree with the call. It would have been great, in fact, to have a much more democratic discussion of how that money should be used, and that could have been leveraged to do some significant things. I think he saw it as a failure, and in fact, it's, many of the schools that worked with him on that also described it as a failure. So yes. You know, if you give money and you have money, you're not a bad person. I'd like to have money. I don't. But I don't have enough to give away, at least. But that doesn't make you a bad person. But we should look at what is the process in which that gets used and how the decisions get made. Back to the question about this school system being broke. We do have a national exam called the National Assessment of Educational Progress Exam. It's given out to schools in representative samples. It's an attempt to get a really good understanding of whether we're improving in the United States in terms of student achievement. And what we have seen over the decades is a gradual improvement in student learning that didn't increase as quickly as it did previously when No Child Left Behind was implemented. And so we've seen several reasons why that's not improving. But in fact, overall, there has been improvements. So I do disagree with the notion that schools are broken. On the other hand, I also want to argue that schools aren't as good as they could be. I've always wanted, in fact, higher standards. And in my writing, I've said that we need better schools than we have. We need better teachers, and we need to figure out how to do this all better. I'm not wanting to defend the public schools and say, oh, they're perfect. They're not. They need to be improved.
Let me also say, as the host here, Bernard is absolutely right in that if someone makes money and wants to give it away to charitable causes, the last thing we want to do is make people who are wealthy feel like that they're going to be pilloried every time they give money away. We should want the Warren Buffetts and Bill Gateses of the world to want to help causes. The reason I think it's valuable to follow the money here is not because there are nefarious means in mind, but because the Common Core in particular is very interesting in that education policy often takes a long time. Policy in general takes a long time to go from field testing to actual implementation, especially on a national scale. Mm-hmm. And the question of how it went from an idea in a back room in 2008 to 45 states on board within 2 to 3 years is largely because there was a huge financial push. States needed some help. States like Kentucky got on board right away, with essentially without even seeing what the standards were going to look like in their final formation. And many of the Obama administration's education department members have ties to the Gates Foundation. That's not good or bad. That's just saying if you want to understand right. why the velocity has happened this mm-hmm. way, now you're getting a picture for why the velocity is. And Bill Gates has become the most powerful person in American education policy.
Right. That I would agree with.
But that's not negative or positive. Right. That's just looking at the
right.
situation.
I mean, then we can talk about whether it's negative or positive. But, I mean, one of the things I want people to understand and why I was talking about how schools were different 20 years ago is the way in which decision-making process has shifted to the federal and, again, corporate and national levels, and we need to understand that if we're going to understand how to develop policies that we agree with.
By the way, as the host here, I try not to take a position too much, but I'd have to see more evidence to even come close to believing that this is not just Bill Gates doing what he thinks is best. Whether or not we think it is best, we agree with him, mm-hmm. we can talk about it. But the notion that Microsoft is going to profit, they might through this partnership with Pearson. Mm-hmm. They very well might.
Right.
But that you'd have to convince me much more that that's some sort of the driving motivation here.
Right.
So let's take a very short break. If you want to talk about Common Core and following the money, your thoughts about what we ought to be doing and where we ought to be focusing on when it comes to education, we're here with David Hirsch, who is a professor of education at the University of Rochester, next Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. He is presenting on this issue at the First Unitarian Church, and you're seeing just the seeds of conversation right now that David is hoping will grow into a community conversation next week. When we come back, it's not just the Gates Foundation that's tried to put a lot of money into education. You might have noticed not too long ago, and it feels like ages ago now, that Mark Zuckerberg spent $100 million in trying to reform Newark, and that $100 million is on the verge of essentially being wiped out by a new election of a mayor there. What have we learned from Newark? What are the lessons there? And we'll continue the conversation with David Hirsch next on Member-Supported Public Radio. Thursday on The Next Connections, we preview the documentary called Citizen Coke, Who Funds the Tea Party? We'll continue to follow the money in our discussion with the filmmakers. On Thursday night, you can join David K. Johnston, others, and me for a screening and discussion of Citizen Coke at the Little Theater. We'll help you prepare for the film Thursday on Connections with Evan Dawson.
Have you been exploring Grandma's attic lately? Is that garage sale find worth its weight in gold? Join us for WXXI's second annual appraisal fair, Saturday, June 14th. Bring in your favorite treasure and have it appraised by one of our certified antique experts. For tickets and information, go public at wxxi.org/events or call 258-0200. Supported in part by ESL Federal Credit Union.
Right back with David Hirsch here. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We were just during the break. You said your work is on how many different strands you try to tie together in education, and we're seeing that just this hour.
It's a huge thing. It's a huge undertaking. It's fascinating, and that's why I'm trying to have this conversation to get other people as in part of the conversation.
All right. Call this program right now if you want to talk about not only Common Core, but education funding and your thoughts about that. It wasn't long ago that on Oprah Winfrey's show, she had Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, on with Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, and at the time, the mayor of Newark, Cory Booker, who is now a New Jersey senator, and they were announcing a big new program to try to turn Newark schools around. And it started with a $100 million donation from Mark Zuckerberg, over $20 million a year over 5 years, with the first big component was expanding charter schools in Newark. And I want to listen to Cory Booker, if we could. This is Cory Booker talking about Newark schools. At the time, this is him talking about ways that he wanted to address education with this $100 million.
If you start creating a robust education system, not only are you nurturing the genius and of your future, but you're going to affect housing values, you're going to affect neighborhood security, you're going to affect the economic strength of your city. Education really is the key. It's the key to our national future, and this is what people understand. We have a cancer at the core of our country, which is our mediocrity, or worse, in our schools. And we've got to deal with that and address that. Or as we continue to decline and other nations continue to surpass us in educational attainment, in a global knowledge-based economy, you can't have a first-rate economy and have a second-rate education system.
That was Cory Booker, the mayor of Newark, talking about this $100 million. Since then, Ross Baraka has been elected mayor of Newark, and he has said he's thrown out everything that Booker, Christie, and Zuckerberg wanted to do because they expanded charter schools. And what Baraka is saying now is that the charter schools, you can debate whether they are doing any better for the students, but the non-charter public schools are even more left behind, of which most Newark school students still go to. And they're throwing this out. The reason I wanted to play that soundbite, though, from Cory Booker, is because there's a big chicken and an egg question here, which came first question in this country. And that is, Cory Booker is saying there that we have poverty and we have blighted neighborhoods, and we have people in trouble because schools are struggling and they've got to be fixed. A lot of people say schools will be fixed when you fix poverty. David, which side makes more sense to you?
Well, you have to do both, which is probably the answer you were hoping for.
No, I do think it's a complex question.
Yeah, it's a complex question.
But you agree with his formulation there that we've got a – he said we have a cancer at the core of our cities.
The comment that was made is that we were falling behind other countries internationally. And I'm, you know, and the comparison that people make is our scores on the PISA exam, PISA, which provides a ranking of countries in terms of their ability in math and literacy, and the United States generally falls in the middle of the pack, higher in some years, lower in others, and higher and lower in different in both subjects. The point I want to make is that if you take out the students who are living in poverty, which I realize you can't take out, but if you count our middle class and upper class students and compare those to other countries, and we have a much higher rate of poverty, of childhood poverty, than all the industrial countries but Romania. We have the second highest rate of poverty of the industrialized countries. So they don't have that same group of students who are living in poverty that we do. I think New Zealand's poverty rate for children is something like 2 or 3%. And Rochester has, the third or fourth highest rate of childhood poverty in the United States. But if you take out and don't, if you didn't test the students who were living in poverty, we actually look really good. We're at the top of the charts compared to other countries. So we can see that if we solve the problem of poverty, we would improve our schools in terms of test scores, and we would be able to conclude that our students are doing better. So we really need to attack the problem of poverty and the problem of segregation, because we also had a recent report that New York State has the most segregated schools of any state in the United States. And that mostly affects African-American students and Hispanic students who see very few other middle-class and white students in many of their classes. You know, we have a poverty rate in the United States. In Rochester, 90% students living in poverty, 90% students of color. So we really have to figure out how to deal with that. And that's what you had on the show a couple of weeks ago, a group from, I think it was downtown Urban Presbyterian, who went to Wake County to look at how the schools were operating there.
Wake County, North Carolina. Right. Where they, in 1976, merged essentially the white suburban districts with the largely minority urban districts.
Yeah. And because they make sure that they have no school that has majority of students living in poverty, but that the students who are living in poverty are dispersed among the schools, they have a much higher student achievement rate than a community like Rochester. Of course, you got into the conversation of how you might get there, and nobody has the answer to that question, but there might be baby steps or some things that might be started. But at least to begin the conversation of how do we solve the problem of the high concentration of poverty in Rochester, and that unless we do that, I don't see how we're ever going to solve the educational problem. So to me, that has to be the priority. At the same time, of course, I'm an educator, and so I work in schools, and I care about improving what goes on in classroom, and I've worked in Rochester. I was one of the founders some 14 years ago of the Teaching and Learning Institute at East High School, which last night at East High School celebrated its anniversary once again. And it's a very successful program and prepares students for careers in education as counselors and teachers. And they have a very high graduation rate and a high percentage of students going on to university. And many of them have gone on to be educators. And I've met them in their professional roles since then. But so I care about that. But that's not solving the problem. That's getting a small program that's successful and helps a few students to achieve.
Were you surprised that Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren has, in many ways, embraced the notion of charter schools?
Yes and no. The charter schools seem to get embraced. And my concern, as you were hinting at, is what happens when we start privatizing. If you have a lot of charter schools, and I know that Joe Klein of Klein Steel is talking about 25 new charters, and that there's a charter starting that's a partnership with RIT, and so there's a number of them number of anticipated openings over the next few years. What happens with charter schools is they're not required to accept students for whom English is a second language, students with disabilities, and so they have the possibility of creaming off the more able students from the public schools, leaving the less able students behind, which you can get, and this is the fear for many, is that basically then the public schools become a dumping ground for the students that that the charter schools don't want. And you also lose funding because you have fewer students, et cetera, and it can lead to a decline in the public schools themselves.
We are going to be talking about that initiative in the coming weeks here on this program. And if you're just joining us, my guest for the hour is David Hirsch, a professor of education at the University of Rochester, who is next week going to be hosting an event about Following the Money, How Education Policy is Made in New York State, a dialogue. And it's going to be happening from 7 to 9 p.m. next Tuesday at the First Unitarian Church in Rochester. That's on South Winton Road. Now, there's a lot of timely news today. Again, if you're just joining us, the Gates Foundation decided that they are now calling for at least somewhat of a delay in Common Core. David is being careful to parse this, but the Gates Foundation, which is the biggest economic and financial driver of Common Core in this country, is saying 2 years. Let's let people adapt. Let's let teachers adapt. 2 years before we get back on a full testing schedule. That everything that was sort of framed out, we'll get it all in 2 years. But David's pointing out we're not exactly setting everything aside.
No, actually, we're still doing the Common Core. We're still using actually the full testing schedule. What they're saying is that not to use the test scores in a high stakes manner to evaluate teachers. Which right now the test score is supposed to be 40%, and it depends on who you talk to, 20 or 40% of the teacher's evaluation. So not to use it in that manner.
If you see a headline that says Gates Foundation calls for moratorium on Common Core, is that headline getting it wrong?
Yes.
Just like another headline that you saw recently that you thought got it wrong, and
right.
And there's another issue in the news. What was bothering you about a USA Today headline?
This is in our morning newspaper. This is on this California teachers. Well, let's see. The Los Angeles County Superior Court judge ruling, basically ending tenure for teachers in California, and the headline is "Chalk It Up to Teacher Versus Student Needs." And I have problems with the decision itself, and I'll say something about that in a second. But I have problems with the headline, because what's being portrayed in the press and in the public is that teachers' needs or interests are opposite of student needs. And in fact, I've never met teachers who were interested in not having their students succeed and doing as well as possible. And we're setting up an antagonistic situation between teachers and students, or between teachers and the community. One of my many fears is that such headlines and the way in which teachers are often being denigrated in the press is leading to a decline in enrollments in teacher education programs, which that isn't such a problem. It affects my job. But the problem is we're not going to be able to attract the best and the brightest into teaching, because people are seeing it as a career, and basically which you get criticized in the media daily as a failure. And I know that we have...
Is that just a notion, or are we seeing actual evidence?
I have actual evidence. I have student teachers who go out to the school for the first day of student teaching, and we place them with a cooperating teacher, and the teacher says, I'm sorry that you're here to become a teacher. You should go back to the university and drop your enrollment in the Warner School of Education and decide to do something else. And now I just forgot the second point I was going to make. But we've seen a real decline in teacher education enrollments in local teacher education institutions, ranging from 30 to 70%. And many of them, some have managed to keep up, but generally a 30 to 70% decline in local teacher education institutions, because it's now seen as a career that you don't want to go into, because it's just you got all these mandates being put on you in terms of curriculum. You have this whole focus on testing, in which you're spending so much time during the school year giving tests to students, so it's less and less time teaching. You're not having the possibility or the flexibility to develop your own curriculum, or at least it's not being seen by many that teachers, by administrators who say, well, we have to do the Common Core. That means we need to do New York State Engage. Here's your curriculum. It's scripted for you. Just follow this. And what people are saying is, no, I want to go into teaching because I know something about history, and I want to do that well, and I want to be able to develop my own curriculum. And so my fear is that the best and the brightest aren't going to go into it anymore because they don't see it as a career that, in fact, is rewarding as a career, and it's one in which people will say, why are you teaching? You should be doing something else if you're smart.
I don't want to speak for Joe Klein, again, of Klein Steel,
right,
who I hope to have on this program in the coming weeks, who has been a big advocate mm-hmm. of education reforms, including right. charter schools. But folks from the business community might say, look, they respect teachers mm-hmm. and the work the teachers do, but their concern is that unions or teachers, in some general sense, are too concerned about issues like tenure, et cetera. And mm-hmm. should be more willing to be flexible. And so they may say, mm-hmm. and again, this is not my opinion, but right. they may say, and I've read it in many places, it takes an outsider to reform education because education is wrong from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
You think that construction is also incorrect?
Right, well, because I'm on the inside and I've been trying to figure out and for 25 years how to improve education. And I think I have examples of things that we've done.
Is there a role for the business community?
I think there is a role for the business community. But I also think, and we've mentioned this earlier, it's complicated. You know, so the decision in California was basically ending tenure for teachers in California. Now, there's a reason that tenure's put in is so that teachers won't be dismissed without just cause. It doesn't mean lifetime employment no matter what you do. Sometimes people think that the only way you can lose tenure is, you know, if you murder a student or something. You know, that's not the case. What I do agree in part with the argument about tenure in that I think the process, we need to develop a different process. And this would be a good thing to discuss with anybody who's willing to discuss it is, tenure should take, I think, longer to achieve. But what we really need to do is give feedback and help to teachers so that they're always seen as improving. I've actually taught, I was an elementary teacher for 8 years. I directed a school for a number of years. And my goal was to always be seeing how could the teachers improve what they're doing, what support can we give, and to make sure that I know what my teachers are doing and what they're like. We need to develop a community. In fact, you know, I was just in, as I said, New Zealand and Australia, and I was visiting schools in New Zealand, which has no standardized tests at all, zero. And I was in schools where teachers were team teaching with each other. They were developing curriculum. Students were working across subject areas, across grade levels. None of the pressure or fear that I sense in American classrooms.
But the concern is without some assessment, that there it would breed complacency or laziness among students. Doesn't happen, you're saying.
I didn't see that. In fact, I mean, I saw some wonderful examples of – now, they were exceptional examples. I went to some wonderful schools. I saw one school where fifth and sixth graders designed the building for the school to be environmentally sustainable. So they designed a new building. And then they wrote a 25-page pamphlet on the care of the building, care and maintenance of the building, and what you needed to do every day in order to make sure it was producing energy, using energy efficiently, et cetera. They were doing stuff that we wish high school students in the United States were doing. I didn't get a sense of
complacency.
What
did they get on their SATs?
They don't have SATs.
That's right.
No, I don't know. Maybe they have a state standardized exam for college entrance. I didn't ask. But
What do the teachers there that you spoke to?
Mm-hmm.
What are their thoughts? Are they scared about the notion of standardized tests coming in? Do they think that there is some place for some standardized testing? What was some of the feedback you got?
Well, they're afraid of standardized testing because of what it might do in terms of the culture of the school. What they now is a very collaborative, embracing culture in which teachers and students work together. Families come. I was watching families come to campus during the day. They were just entering classrooms. Everybody was engaged in learning, and doing very good things. Now, of course, I didn't. You know, this is probably were bad examples I could have seen, but I didn't see those. But what I suggested is they follow also the Finland example, which is, okay, you want a standardized test because you want to know how schools are doing. You can give, like we had the NAEP exam, which gives us a standardized test to schools, which they do. They have a set curriculum. They do give a standardized test, but it's not of the students or teachers. So it's an assessment of how individual schools and how the country as a whole are doing. And we attach no grades to students or teachers, so there's none of that pressure. But it's an attempt by the government, the Ministry of Education, to know what's going on. I said, so do something like that, which will reassure people. And you can use as also feedback. One of the things we need to do is use tests as a way to know whether what we're doing is working or not, and whether we're meeting our goals. One of the questions about the Common Core test, of course, that's coming up is we can't even know the questions on the Common Core because there's a gag order, essentially, that those questions can't be shared with other educators or with anybody.
Before we wrap up with David Hirsch, again, this coming Tuesday, he's hosting an event called Follow the Money, How Education Policy is Made in New York. That's from 7 to 9 this coming Tuesday at the First Unitarian Church in Rochester. The goal from this kind of event, you don't fix education in one night.
No.
But what's the goal, David?
The goal is to begin the conversation just like we're having. This is complicated. I only know, you know, I have my viewpoint. So I'm glad to have questions from anybody questioning my motivations, questioning whether I'm missing part of the picture, et cetera, and to basically begin that conversation and also see what other things we would like to know and who might be able to provide that information. I'm not the source of all knowledge.
Are you optimistic that at least since the rollout of the Common Core standards, there's been much more dialogue? It's interesting. When you read that Washington Post article, mm-hmm. there wasn't a whole lot of conversation when it was sort of being created kind of quietly. But now that it's rolled out, there's mm-hmm. a lot of conversation, whether you're for it or right. against it. Do you think that's healthy?
I wish the conversation was much broader than about the Common Core. In fact, I think that's diverting us from some of those other questions that we've been discussing, which is how do we have good schools? How do we support teachers to doing well? If we give them tenure, how do we make sure that they continue to be improved during the life of their career?
Hope to continue the conversation with you, not only on this program, but again, next Tuesday night, 7 to 9, at the First Unitarian Church. Thanks for taking the time. I know it wasn't long ago that you were on the other part of the world, so nice for
yes.
you to come back in and visit with us, David.
Okay. Thank you.
David Hirsch, a professor of education at the University of Rochester. Thanks to you for listening. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks to engineer Dave Campo. And we'll see you right back here on Thursday on member-supported public radio.